Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Killers podcast in True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
All right, counsel.
Thank you. Good morning. Could you please tell the jurors your first and last name?
Ian Hartnett.
And how are you employed? What do you do for work?
I'm a forensic scientist, too, in the criminalistics unit, as well as a crime scene response unit at the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory.
And how long have you worked for the crime lab?
Approximately a total of 10 years.
And what are your general responsibilities as a forensic scientist too?
In the criminalistics unit, I examine items of evidence for the possible presence of biological fluids, such as blood, semen, and saliva, and those items would include clothing, weapons, or sexual assault kits, among other items. I also collect and identify trace materials, such as hairs and fibers. I perform damage analysis on clothing and collect gunshot residues.
Do you have to undergo some specific training and education in order to perform those tasks at the crime lab?
Yes, I have a bachelor's degree in biology as well as a master's degree in forensic science. In addition, I received approximately 9 months of training in the crime laboratory as well.
Do you have to take proficiency or competency tests on a regular basis?
Yeah, so a competency test is taken after each module in the training. They address certain things like blood identification, semen identification, and after each of those modules, I took a competency test to move on to the next portion of the training. Yearly, I also take multiple proficiency tests in biological fluid identification, as well as trace identification and crime scene response.
I'd like to talk a little bit first about the crime scene response. So you, as a forensic scientist, are a civilian, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Do you often work in tandem with a trooper from the crime scene services section?
Yes, generally I work alongside law enforcement as well as crime scene services when processing a crime scene.
And when you go to a crime scene to process with the crime scene response unit, what's the goal or what are you looking to do there?
My focus generally is on biological evidence, such as blood, semen, saliva, as well as documentation through sketches and diagrams.
And the trooper from the crime scene services section that is usually there, the law enforcement, are they also documenting the scene as well and reviewing those same areas but through photographs?
Yeah, so I can't speak for all of their responsibilities. I do know they take photographs, video, and they also take their own diagrams on occasion.
Now, in addition to locating biological evidence, do you sometimes perform what's called screening tests at crime scenes?
Yes, I do.
And what are the common screening tests that you can do at a crime scene?
I perform screening tests for blood as well as screening tests for semen, depending on the case history and what the forensic relevant evidence is.
And does that help inform you on what to collect from a crime scene sometimes?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm afraid to say if there's a large pool of blood on a floor, you can't collect that all and take it back to the lab, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So how do you collect a sampling of it in order to then later process something like a red-brown stain or some sort of biological spot or stain that you observe?
Depending on the substrate on which the biological fluid is located, I'll take a swabbing of the item, which is generally something like a Q-tip to swab up the stain. Or if it's on a soft surface, I could potentially take a cutting to preserve that biological evidence for future testing.
And in some instances, do you actually take the whole object if it's possible?
In some instances, yes, that's correct. We would take the whole object depending on what it is.
Okay. I'm going to draw your attention to January 24th of 2023. Do you recall being asked to come out with the crime scene response unit on that day or that evening?
Yes, I do.
And where was the first place that you went in this response?
I responded to South Shore Hospital, the emergency department.
And fair to say that Trooper Rose Stoffers was also dispatched to that location as well?
Yes, that's correct.
And did you make observations of a person who was identified as Lindsay Clancy at South Shore Hospital?
Yes, I did.
And did you observe her to have red-brown stains on her body?
I noted red-brown stains on her hands. I did not have the opportunity to examine her entire body. She was mostly covered with blankets and other types of medical equipment, but I did note red-brown stains on her hands.
And clearly she was there for some sort of treatment, right? So why was your focus on her hands as a crime scene response technician and a criminalist?
At that point in time, I was collecting samples from her hands for potential biological evidence relating to the crime. So when I noted the red-brown stains, I collected samples from her hands.
And while at South Shore Hospital, you were also aware that she had come into the hospital with clothing that was cut off, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And that clothing was bagged up and collected?
Yes, I returned that clothing to the crime laboratory.
Who did you receive the clothing from? Do you recall?
I believe it was Trooper Dan Lawler.
At some point after being at South Shore Hospital, did you then respond to 47 Summer Street in Duxbury?
Yes, I did.
Did you have somebody with you that day?
I had a forensic scientist trainee at that time.
Okay. At 47 Summer Street, were you directed to a particular area to examine first?
I first entered the home through the main floor and then was directed into the basement of the home.
And when you came into the basement, or I guess this could be true of when you respond to most crime scenes, is it the best practice to be one of the first in the home to examine the home as it is or the scene as it is?
Generally, crime scene services would enter first to photograph and video so that there's no personnel in those photos or videos. Then I would normally enter, or the crime scene response unit would enter next so that nothing is disturbed and that we can mark and test and collect evidence as is prior to the detective unit coming in. And then once our things are marked and documented, then the detective unit would also enter the residence.
So when you came into the basement at 47 Summer Street, did you observe some areas of the basement that were of significance to you as the crime scene response?
Yes, I did.
And did you observe a red brown stain on the floor?
Yes, I did.
Once you observe it, what do you do with that stain?
I marked the stain using a piece of ruler tape, and I designated that stain as stain A so that I can properly refer to it in my report.
Okay, I'm going to approach. Is that familiar to you?
Yes, it is.
Is that stain A that you just told us about?
Yes, that's correct.
That may be admitted.
Is it 158?
Thank you.
And showing you now on the screen what's been marked as Exhibit 158. Obviously, this appears to be on carpet, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
What did you do to collect sampling of that? What is the first thing you did with that stain?
So once I marked it, I then requested it be photographed, and that is the resulting photograph from that request. I then performed a screening test for the presence of blood on that stain. The screening test was positive, and at that point, once I documented that result in my notes, I then took two swabs of that stain for further testing.
Now, when you're at a scene and you see something that is a red burn stain, you don't refer to it as blood, correct?
That's correct.
And even after a screening test, you don't refer to it as blood, do you?
That's correct.
Those preliminary tests are just screens, and so what do you do to then later confirm it?
Once the swab is collected and then submitted to the lab, later when I'm assigned the case in the criminalistics unit in the lab, I'll then perform a confirmatory test on any swabs that they're interested in that need to be tested further.
And so as it pertains to the stain A, how do you take the swab? What do you do?
I apply deionized water to two Q-tips and apply it to the stain, and then the red-brown stain is then transferred to the Q-tips. I then package those, seal them, and enter them into our laboratory system and store them in a cold storage unit until they're ready to be further tested.
And fair to say, with this particular investigation, the swabbing from that stain A on the basement floor was labeled as item 3-3.
That's correct.
Did you also go to another area of the house?
Yes, I did.
And what other areas did you go?
I went up to the master bedroom on the second floor of the house.
Did you observe additional red-brown stains in that master bedroom?
Yes, I did.
And so again, when you observe stains, you then note them, mark them, document them, correct?
That's correct.
And how many stains did you document in the master bedroom?
Four.
Okay. And again, just like the stain on the basement where you labeled A, do you kind of start over with the stains in the other bedroom, or do you continue to label them in sequence?
I continue to label them in sequence, so they were B through E.
Okay. So first, referring to stain B, do you recall where that was in the master bedroom?
That was on the floor of the master bedroom in between the bed and the mirror.
I'm going to show you a photo. And is that fair to say stain B?
Stains, yes. True. Correct.
All right. Maybe admit it.
Ms. Harden, showing you 159 on the screen. Fair to say that's not one stain that was observed, correct?
That's correct.
But what did you do to collect, if anything, or screen this particular area of red-brown stains?
Sure. So in this particular case, based on the stains size and distribution, I consider them a related group of stains. So I tested one of the stains, performed a screening test for the presence of blood that was positive. So then I collected two swabs from that stain, just like the other one as before.
Just showing you kind of another photograph of that area. Is that familiar as well?
Yes.
Not sure if this is the next exhibit.
All right, that may be admitted.
And again, now showing what's been marked as 160, you've now testified that there was a grouping of stains. And so based on your observations of the grouping, you were able to identify that they appeared related?
That's correct.
How about stain C? Where was that located?
Stain C, I believe, was located on the mirror.
And just going back to 159, just for reference, can you see the bottom legs of the mirror in this photograph?
Yes.
So they were. It was close to that cluster of stains.
That's correct.
Showing you another photograph. And does that depict the stain C that you noted on the mirror?
Yes, it does.
That may be admitted.
With what's now been marked as 161, stain C, again, is would this be kind of a cluster of related red-brown stains?
Yes, based on their location and their shape, I collected one stain from that area.
Did you perform that same screening test?
Yes, I did.
And what was the result?
It was positive.
And did you then swab and collect from one of those stains as well?
Yes, I did.
Now, stain D, do you recall where that was in the bedroom?
That was on the windowsill.
Show you two more photos. And do those represent where you identify it as stain D?
Yes.
I would ask these be that as two, please.
They may be admitted.
And showing you 162 first. Fair to say that's the inside of the windowsill, correct? Inside the bedroom?
Yes, that's correct.
That night that you were there, did you make any observations of any stains on the outside of the windowsill?
Yes, each of those were documented through photographs.
Did you collect any swabbings from the stains on the outside of the windowsill that night?
No, I did not.
And just kind of showing you for the jury, 163, that's just a further close-up of some of the stains. And is that fair to represent the area that you tested for the screen and then later swabbed?
Yes, that's correct.
And stain E, do you recall where that was located?
That was located on the nightstand next to the bed.
The photograph. Is that familiar to be stain E?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, that may be admitted.
And I'm just showing you another photograph of the outside of the house. Do you see staining that you observed that night on the outside?
Yes, I do.
And I would move to admit this as well.
All right, that may be admitted.
So first, exhibit 164. You observed several stains in that location?
Yes, I did.
And did you do the same thing as some of the other grouping of stains? Screen one area, collect a swab from one area?
Yes, that's correct.
And just now showing exhibit 165, if you can see at the top. There's a stain on the outside of the windowsill. Did you observe that on January 24?
Yes, I did.
But you did not swab or screen that stain, correct?
That's correct.
Why not?
Generally, we don't collect every single stain from a scene. I organize the stains based on location, size, shape, distribution, and collect it from multiple areas. And in this particular case, I knew there was a single bleeder in that area, so I collected from numerous stains, just not that particular one.
And in addition to that stain on the windowsill, fair to say you did observe some other staining on the outside of the house as well, further down the window and on top of the first floor window frame.
Yes, I did.
While you were out in the backyard, did you also observe staining or red-brown stains in the yard?
Yes, I did.
And did you do that same procedure of marking it, screening it, collecting a sample from it?
Yes, I did.
Just going to show you one more. Show that to you. Is that familiar?
Yes, it is.
I'm afraid to say that was then documented as stain F.
Correct.
I've moved to assistant.
Right, that may be admitted.
Is it 166? As far as the work that you did on the scene at 47 Summer Street on January 24th, fair to say it was limited to documenting these areas, swabbing these areas for the most part?
Yes, and I also collected a pair of pajamas and a pink bathrobe from the basement.
Were all of the swabbings and those items collected brought back to the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab?
Yes, they were.
Are you aware that there were other items that were collected within that home on January 24th that were also brought back to the State Police Crime Lab for further analysis?
Yes.
Moving to January 25th of 2023, did you go to the Brigham and Women's Hospital as part of the crime scene response, again, to see Lindsay Clancy, the defendant?
Yes, I did.
And you observed her at that location as well?
Yes, I did.
Did you take further samples from her?
Yes, I collected samples, swabbings from underneath her fingernails.
And then as far as your duties on this case with crime scene response, did you return back to 47 Summer Street on January 15th of 2023?
I believe I returned on June 15th.
I'm sorry, June 15th. Thank you.
Yes, I did.
And when you returned to the home on June 15th, did you go in the nighttime, the daytime?
I went during the day.
And again, with a crime scene response trooper or a crime scene services trooper?
Yes, correct.
What was the purpose of going back to 47 Summer Street on June 15th?
I was informed that additional testing was being requested on some of the red-brown stains that were noted on the exterior of the house up on the shingles they had not previously collected from. So I went back to see if I could potentially collect samples from those.
Is that something in your training and experience is possible to collect biological substances from something like a shingle months after the incident occurred?
It's possible. So if it's requested, we'll certainly go out and attempt to do that.
And in this particular incident, you went out and first made observations of the rear of the home, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And then made closer observations of underneath that second floor window?
Yes, correct.
Did you observe any obvious staining in that area?
There appeared to be a reddish brown stain underneath the windowsill.
So what did you do once you observed those stains?
I marked that stain as stain A, and then I also marked additional stains further down on the side of the house on the shingles.
Where was stain A?
That was right underneath the windowsill, the window that was farthest right, what would have been the master bedroom on the exterior.
Okay. this photograph of the rear of the home, does this photograph at least show the area where you observed stain A?
Yes.
Okay. And can you point out to me where that was?
Sure. It was sort of on the left side near where this orange, it seems to be some sort of window insulation. So it was right underneath there. So I did perform a screening test on that.
Okay. And what were the results of the screening test?
That was negative.
I would move to admit this photo.
That may be admitted.
167. Again, on June 15th, when you were there, 2023, showing you now exhibit 167. Kind of closing in on underneath that window, there's that orange ball that you described. It appeared to be some sort of insulation.
Correct.
And that was negative. That stain you observed was negative. So you didn't do anything further with that.
That's correct.
As far as the other areas, you have stains B, C, and D, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Is that a fair representation of stain D?
Yes, that's correct.
And while I'm here, stain C and D.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And again, stain B is kind of in between that top floor window and the first floor window.
Correct.
And stains C and D are just above the first floor window.
Yes, that's correct.
All right, those may be admitted.
Left off before the break, we were talking about returning to the home on June 15th of 2023, and that you examined some stains on the shingles on the outside of the house. Do you recall that line of questioning?
Yes, I do.
In addition to marking the stains, did you collect anything from the area of the rear of the house on June 15th related to stains B, C, and D?
Yes, I did.
I'm just going to show you some items. You want to take a look at the items that are in those bags.
Let me take them out of the bags.
Just so that you can examine them. In these bags, first the one labeled shingle with stain D, then the one labeled shingle with stain C, and then the third shingle with stain D. Are these the shingles that you observed those stains on June 15, 2023?
Yes, they are.
I would move to admit these three items as the next.
All right, they may be admitted.
And Ms. Hardin, fair to say those shingles were then collected, brought back to the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab for further analysis?
Yes, I also collected swabs at the scene from each of those shingles in addition to collecting the shingles themselves.
Now, turning to your other role at the lab, working in the criminalistics unit, did you also perform criminalistics testing in relation to this case?
Yes, I did.
And fair to say, for items that were collected from the home at 47 Summer Street on January 24th, 2023, you did some confirmatory testing on several of those items.
Yes, that's correct.
And what items did you do confirmatory testing on?
I performed confirmatory testing on some of the swabs that were collected from the home. I believe those swabs collected from stain A. I would have to check my notes specifically for the stains.
That's okay. Let's just kind of go through some of the areas of the house first. So as far as the stains that we discovered or that we talked about previously, stain A on the basement floor, that was item 3-3. Stain B on the bedroom floor, that cluster, that's items 3-4, correct?
Correct.
Stain D from the bedroom windowsill, that was labeled as item 3-6, correct?
Correct.
And stain F, which is the snow on the backyard, or the stain on the snow in the backyard, item 3-8. Those were all confirmed at the laboratory to be blood.
That is correct.
And again, we talked briefly earlier about the fact that there's always a screen, and then that you can't make a determination of the substance until a confirmatory test is done, correct?
That's correct.
And so that is a process that you do at the lab?
Yes, correct.
And as far as the knife that we just were referring to, the knife that was recovered, what's in Exhibit 170, you were able to examine that further, or swabs taken from that knife at the lab?
That's correct.
And confirmed that what you say was stain A on the blade of that knife was confirmed to be blood?
Yes, I performed the screening test as well as the confirmatory test for blood on stain A at the laboratory.
Now, once you are in the laboratory and determine that blood is confirmed on these particular items, or that there is biological substance present, do you do anything to prepare those items for further testing in a different unit of the lab?
Yes, I do.
What do you do?
For the swabs that I collected and for the swabbings that I took of the knife, I then cut them up, give them a separate item number, and preserve those for potential DNA analysis. Half of the samples also preserved for any future analysis if necessary.
And fair to say it's a different unit at a different part of the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab that conducts DNA testing, correct?
That's correct.
And so if some of the items that you examined are selected for further testing, those swabbings or further snippets would then be sent to the unit, DNA unit.
That's correct.
Now, as it pertains to some of the other items that were collected from 47 Summer Street, you also did some work on 3 exercise bands, correct?
Yes, I did.
And what did you do in relation to the 3 exercise bands that were collected?
After documenting them in the lab, I took samples from each of the ends of the exercise bands, as well as a separate sample from the center of each of the exercise bands.
Okay. And so the first band, which is identified as a yellow exercise band, had previously been identified as item 2-2, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so did you take samples from both the ends and the middle of that item?
Yes, I did.
I'm just going to approach the photograph. Is that familiar to you?
Yes, it is.
And in addition to actually taking the swabs, you also document the item that you're analyzing and reviewing, correct?
Yes. Prior to performing any kind of collection or testing on an item, I'll photograph it.
And so this particular photograph, is it fair to say this is a photograph from your work at the laboratory with the yellow exercise band?
Yes, it is.
I would move to admit this as the next exhibit.
That may be admitted.
$174.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so Ms. Harden, now showing you what's been marked as Exhibit 174, the exercise band, you indicated that you took swabbings from around the handle areas, correct?
Correct.
And then the middle of the band.
That's correct.
Why didn't you swab the whole thing?
The purpose of the collection was to potentially determine who was holding or had contact with the ends of the band and who potentially had contact with the center of the band, potentially those being two different individuals. So I collected samples separate from the ends as in addition to the center.
And was your approach on each one of the bands the same?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So the second band, which is the black band that was identified as item 2-3, you took samples again from the ends and the middle?
That's correct.
And I'm just going to show you another photograph. And is that the black band you examined?
Yes, it is.
That may be admitted.
175.
And finally, the blue exercise band that was recovered from the home at 47 Summer Street, that was identified as item 2-4. Did you examine it in the same fashion, swabbing the ends in the middle?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Is that a photograph of the band when you were examining it at the lab?
Yes, it is.
All right, that may be admitted.
And as far as the swabbings that you took of each of these three exercise bands, what did you do with the swabbings after you swabbed the items?
I allowed the swabs to air dry. I gave them each a item number, and then I preserved half of each of the swabs for additional testing in the DNA unit.
And as far as your knowledge of some of the additional testing, you're aware that the exercise band swabbings were sent forward to the DNA unit for additional analysis, correct?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cross?
Thank you. Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So, Ms. Hadnett, you initially went into the home at 47 Summer Street at what time that day? Mm-hmm. Was it in the evening, early morning hours?
It was the early morning hours of January 25th.
Okay. And you had somebody that was learning underneath you that was with you at that time?
That's correct.
And you went into the various areas of the house. You went down to the basement, right?
Yes.
You talked about the stain that you had taken swabs of that was on the carpet down in the basement, right?
That's correct.
And you went upstairs, and then ultimately you ended up in the bedroom, and you made observations of a number of blood drops, or red, brown, as you put it, drops on the floor, right?
There were numerous red brown stains on the floor, yes.
On the clothing, the bed clothes that were on the bed as well, right?
I do not believe I documented red brown stains on the clothing. It may have been there. I don't know if I have that in my notes.
How about the on top of the nightstand, there was the knife that counsel had talked about, correct?
Yes, correct.
And then you look at the window, and there was a red-brown stain on the right-hand side of the window as you're looking outside from inside in the bedroom, right?
Yes, correct.
And you made observations of some of the markings on the shingles that were directly below the window and directly above where the red-brown stains were found in the snow underneath.
Yes, that's correct.
Your confirmatory tests... First of all, what you do is you have your screening tests. Back in the day, they used to, you use the ethylene. Do you still use that?
No, not this time.
Now you use what, crystalline? What do you use now?
It's called Castlemeyer.
And the Castlemeyer, basically, as I say, back in the day, it used to be that you would have vegetation that could give you a false positive, right?
Correct.
Certain chemicals could give you a false positive.
Correct.
Animal feces could give you a false positive, right?
Depending on what's in them, possibly, yes.
The test now that you have, the confirmatory test, is a lot more accurate, if you will. But still, nevertheless, I said confirmatory, screening. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, you still have to do a confirmatory test, right?
That's correct.
And back in the day, it used to be Takayama test. What do you do for confirmatory now?
We use a test card, a human trace test card, which is something similar to a COVID test or a pregnancy test, where you just put the liquid in the beginning of the card, the liquid runs up, and if there's two lines, it's positive, and if it's only one line, it's negative.
So that's not the Teichmann test, is it?
No.
Okay, so the confirmatory test that you use, that's a color test, though, right?
It's a immunographic test. It's an assay, so it's not really a color test where you add the drops to the swab and it's going to change color.
Okay.
It's a reaction that's happening within the test card between antibodies and antigens that produce either two lines or one line.
So let's take, for example, in the bedroom on the floor, the counsel had shown you a number of drops that were in the floor between the bed and that mirror, mm-hmm. right? You did confirmatory testing on that?
I did back at the lab. I screened it at the scene and then, I'm sorry, confirmed it back at the lab.
And that confirmed that it was human blood?
It confirms that it's blood and it indicates human blood.
You have to do a precipitin test or something to determine if it's animal blood or human blood, right?
So the test card that we use indicates that it confirms that it's blood. It indicates human blood because it may react with primate blood. So it's not specific to human blood.
The bottom line is that you, as a chemist working for the Mass State Police investigating this case, are confirming that the stains that are on the floor of the bedroom, all the blood, all those stains are in fact human blood, right?
I'm confirming the single stain that I collected from is blood.
All right. And when you say the single stain, that would be you use the Q-tip and you swab it, and that would be from all of the stains that were all over the place on the floor, right?
I did not swab each individual stain. I took a swab from each collection of stains.
Okay. And that was human blood, confirmatory, indicating it was human, right?
It was confirmatory for blood and indicated human blood.
All right. Now, one of the exhibits that the district attorney had pointed out to you was the mirror. Exhibit 161. You remember that, the mirror?
Yes, I do.
You see those drops that appear to be going down from above in a downward direction? See those drops? You tested those?
I do see the red-brown stains, and yes, I performed a screening test on one of them at the scene.
Okay, and you're comfortable that in fact is human blood, correct?
I did not perform a confirmatory test on that specific stain back at the lab, so I just screened it at the scene, and that stain was not tested any further at that time.
It was what?
I performed a screening test at the scene. I did not perform any confirmatory tests on that specific stain back at the lab.
Well, there's no doubt that the stains that are depicted on the full-length mirror that we can see in Exhibit 161 and the stains that were on the floor next to the bed and the stains that were on the floor in front of the bed heading towards the door all were the same consistency, right?
I didn't make any determination whether or not they were all the same consistency.
Human blood?
I did not make a determination that they were human blood, so based on the scientific results, I cannot say that they were human blood.
As a chemist and involved in crime scenes many, many times, would you agree that the substance that's on the floor and the substance that's in the mirror and the substance that's on the doorknob and the drops that are heading out of the bedroom, those in fact, more probable than not, would be human blood, right?
I do make certain assumptions based on the color of a stain, the size, the shape of the stain, that it could potentially be blood, and that would indicate what I might want to test further. So I don't make an assumption off the bat that it's going to be human blood. That's why we perform scientific testing to screen for blood and then to confirm it's blood.
Okay. So this here, you indicated was some type of insulation?
That's what it appeared to me. I mean, I'm not an expert, but it looked like some sort of foam insulation.
And it's a little difficult to see with the... See that there? Above the little orange, looks like a little balloon, but let's say it's insulation, or let's say it's something for bugs. You see the red substance on that object?
I do.
See the red substance, red-brown stain on that window ledge or windowsill?
Yes, I do.
You tested that?
I did not test that specific stain, no.
Yep. So do we know if that was blood?
No, not at this time.
Pretty obvious that it was, though, to you, right?
It appears to be a red-brown stain on the exterior of the windowsill, but I did not do any testing on it.
Okay. And did I hear you correctly that the... it was 5 months later that the state police investigators decided that you would get the shingles off the house?
I don't know when that decision was made, but that was the day that I was requested to go out.
And then the district attorney showed you the shingles and envelopes. You opened them up and looked at them. And you did a confirmatory test on those?
I did not. I performed a screening test on each of those stains at the scene. I did not perform a confirmatory test on those stains due to the fact that the red-brown stain color was no longer visible. So potentially the...
It was degraded because of the weather, right?
At some point, the red-brown stains appeared darker. They were no longer red-brown. So I thought that the material could be less. So I didn't want to use any additional material for confirmatory testing.
School, as a chemist, you learn how to testify, don't you?
Yes.
One of the things they tell you is look at the jury. When the lawyer asks a question, you look at the jury and you answer the question, right?
That's correct.
Right. So can you just look at me when I ask you just a little bit? A question. Would you agree that weather affects, degrades blood if in fact it is on an object and allowed to stay outside?
Absolutely.
All right. And then, people look at that. And then you'd agree with me that what you noted appeared to be dark?
Yes.
It would almost be like bat guano for that matter. We don't know what it is, right?
No, I cannot make determination what it was. Like, I just performed a screening test, so I could not confirm it was blood. They just screened positive for blood.
Do you remember there was a red-brown stain on the doorknob of the bedroom from the inside of the bedroom going out? Did you notice that?
Potentially, I noticed it. I don't believe I didn't collect from that.
We don't know if that's blood either.
Correct.
And how about the drops, the red-brown drops that were by the door directly underneath the doorknob? Did you test those with your swabs?
No, I did not.
That's all I have.
All right. Cobalt, they redirect?
Just briefly, you were attempting to explain why you did not perform confirmatory testing on the shingles. Can you explain that to the jury?
Because I could no longer see the red-brown stain, it just appeared more of a darker stain, a lighter stain that I had previously saw at the scene. Given that that material, whatever it was on the shingle, may have been limited, performing a confirmatory test is using up additional material to perform that test. So given that it was already potentially limited due to the conditions and the time that had passed and the fact that I could no longer see the red-brown stain, I simply performed the screening test, and once that was positive, I took a swab and just preserved it. I did not perform any more testing in the lab on that swab.
And is that because you would need something to forward on to DNA if you wanted additional testing to be done?
Correct. I would have had to use up a portion of that sample to perform the confirmatory test, and I didn't think that that was in the best interest of the case, given the fact that the material may already have been limited.
And you indicated that you had previously seen those red-brown stains in those same areas that you swabbed and the shingles were collected back in January, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Anything further? All right. Thank you. Please step down. Thank you.
Thank you.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV Licensing.
Yes, TV Licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery. But we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I have been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I have been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.